Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. When the Philadelphia Orchestra was performing her Pulitzer Prize-winning violin concerto, as well as her immensely popular work, Blue Cathedral, I sat down with composer Jennifer Higdon. We talked about her recently premiered Viola Concerto and how she approaches her work these days. When you first start out as a composer or any kind of artist, you perhaps have a certain freedom before you become successful. And then once you have a couple of successes, I've heard some people talk about
The pressure
and the expectation.
Yeah.
And when you sit down to compose, are you thinking about what people will want? I know you've said you don't think about prizes, you don't think about awards, you think about the music.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because the temptation is to get sucked into the pressure and feeling like you have to make another Blue Cathedral or another piece like this. But I've seen that enough with other artists to realize that that's kind of a dangerous way to think. And I also realized that I would get bored if I was writing the same piece over and over. And the players I write for vary quite a bit. When I wrote a bluegrass concerto for The Time for Three Guys, that actually was written very close to Hilary Hahn's violin concerto. Like, it was the next piece. The pieces are extraordinarily different. And the players are different. Their personalities are really different. So I try to tailor it. But for me, in essence, it's about communicating. And I know that if I can put notes on a page that communicate to the performer, that they will communicate that same sort of enthusiasm and energy to the audience. The trick is just not being swayed by these things. The hardest part, I think, was after winning the Pulitzer Prize. It's amazing the amount of pressure, because everyone's watching everything you do afterwards to see exactly. And I was so hyper aware of that, because by that time, I think I was doing so much press. And there were a lot of people who had never heard my music, which I totally understood, but they were like, well, what is this? What is she doing? What is she writing? And I had to really make myself focus and just write, get right down to writing immediately, to jump right back in. And it's something I've actually advised when other people have won prizes and they get kind of thrown by it, because I've seen this happen. I tell them, start writing immediately, because that's the thing that is familiar. It's the thing you know, and it'll keep you kind of like grounded and keep your compass going in the right direction.
And, well, the violin concerto won the Pulitzer Prize.
Right.
And you were talking about how you were doing things that were unusual and perhaps unconventional. And that must have given you confidence to do different things and not to worry about following the rules.
That's true. You know what? I think also growing up in Atlanta, the daughter of a gentleman who was an artist who was always doing experimental films, probably from an early age, I was around so many artists doing experimental things that I don't think I've ever had that barrier up in my head in the way that other people do.
And I've heard you say that it was your dad who said, any kind of sound can be music.
That's right.
That's great. So this is a visual artist who really did seem to influence your composing, in both in terms of thinking visually and thinking expansively.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can remember him saying that as far back as when I was 3 or 4. It was that far back that I remember him talking about art can be anything. Music could be anything. You don't have to follow any rules. You can kind of step outside and do your own thing. And he made a real point of showing us a lot of art that was made by people who hadn't been trained in schools, and also stuff that was been done by people who had a lot of schooling. But it's funny, I never had any kind of sense of value judgment based on that sort of thing.
Let's talk about your viola concerto.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There must be some story behind this that I'm not completely aware of, but the Library of Congress had been asking me for years if I would write something. They had some sort of connection with Roberto Diaz, the head of the Curtis Institute, who is a phenomenal violist. And somehow they had been talking to him. I think Curtis often sends musicians down to play the instruments that they have in the collection down there. They have this spectacular collection of Strads and Guarneris, and they have those instruments have to be played to stay healthy. There has to be someone playing them occasionally. And the Library of Congress they're pretty cornerstone in terms of music history of commissioning works. I don't think I realized how much they are, but a discussion at some point got started with Roberto in the library about me writing a concerto. And it went from me writing a concerto for Roberto and like 6 instruments. We thought it might be a mini concerto. It blossomed immediately to a chamber orchestra. We realized we couldn't go larger than that because the stage at the Library of Congress is so small that you can fit at maximum 40 players on the stage, and that would have to include the conductor and the soloist. So I ended up writing a piece that fits chamber orchestra that can then be moved to a full orchestra. But when I started listening to viola concertos, because I started studying them, trying to figure out what did other composers do, how did they use the instrument, I was struck that so many of them were kind of dark. This is the one instrument that has concerti that are all pretty somber, and I'm sure it's because it's a lower tessitured instrument, although, you know, it's not as low as the bass or the cello.
Yeah, it's a middle voice.
Right, and I don't know whether anyone had never thought about, maybe they'd never thought about the fact that you could write music that's very up and celebratory. So when I started studying all these concerti, it became obvious to me I needed to try to make a turn different from what other people had done. So I worked on writing a concerto that had like very American rhythms that sounds very up and positive in a very celebratory fashion. So it's, you know, when you're writing, though, it's a guessing game. You think you're going to do something, you're not sure what's going to come out. But I'm happy to report after the premiere that it was a very up sort of concerto with a lot of energy and kind of a vibrant sort of sound. And it runs the entire range of the viola, too. It allows it to stay down really low and be rich, but also go right up to the very top of its ability, right up at the top of the fingerboard.
Did you have any visuals in your mind when you were writing this?
You know, with this, I was just thinking about the instrument. And I was thinking about Roberto. What does Roberto look like when he's playing, when he's got a lot of notes? Because concerti have a lot of notes. It's such a simple way to look at it. And I also was endeavoring to write a concerto that was a little different. I have a slow first movement, which is unusual. The second movement's actually a scherzo, which is also unusual. And then the third movement is a mix that has a slow, fast format. But it's definitely very American sounding. It has some jazz rhythms in it. So I figured, you know, the Curtis kids are really good. If I was going to try something like this, this was the moment to do it. So I could figure out if it's not going to work, then I needed to adjust it and do something. But they did a marvelous job with it.
I thought you might have some special fondness for the viola because your viola sonata was one of your early works that...
Yeah, absolutely.
Caught fire.
That's right. And, you know, it's probably because the violists were enthusiastic to have music. So they were quicker to ask for a piece. And when I was in school at Curtis as a student, one of my classmates asked me for a sonata. In fact, I kind of paid tribute to that sonata by opening the last movement with the same kind of gesture that I have at the opening of the second movement of the sonata. It's a great instrument. And you know what? The players now are just incredible. They're better than they've ever been at any point in time. They can play absolutely anything. So it's fun to give them a challenge and also to be able to show off the instrument to the rest of the world.
That's wonderful. Well, it's a great addition to the repertoire.
I'm excited. I'm excited just to have something that we can contribute to them. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jennifer Higdon.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.